Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Happy Tuesday morning, everybody. We're at episode 120 of the Global from Asia podcast. And I am still digesting my birthday cake. Over the weekend on Saturday, I turned a big 35 years old. And I just had a simple dinner and enjoyed it with my wife and kids. I can't believe I feel a lot younger and still kind of hasn't set in that I have two kids and a wife and live with the in-laws and all that crazy stuff. Also, a lot of conversations I have with friends and listeners and readers is immigration, visas, and, you know, the reason why we're born in one place and we get a certain passport has such a big impact on how we can live our lives and do our business. And it doesn't seem to make sense to me. It seems like a broken old system that is somehow ripe for disruption. I've been talking to a lot of people about some different kinds of solutions, and we are always interested to hear from you guys if you're interested. And also, it's probably a good time to meet at some events. We have a bunch of events coming up. It's the spring trade shows coming, and one is the China Smart Sourcing Summit. It's happening at the Global Sources Show, April 17th to the 19th. We had Peter Zaff on an earlier episode talking about it. And there's going to be a lot of great speakers, Amazon experts talking about China sourcing and distribution. I'm also going to be there sharing on the conference too about Hong Kong business and leveraging different structures. So it would be cool to catch you guys there. And of course, there's our own Global from Asia event, the Cross Border Summit, which is on April 16th, Saturday, just before the China Sourcing Summit. And we're excited to announce that we have another sponsor locked in, Net Concepts, which is a search marketing agency in China, helping both Chinese go abroad as well as Westerners do Chinese social media and internet marketing. So thanks, guys, for joining, and we will see you at the event. netconcepts.cn if you want to check out their site in English as well as in Chinese. Okay, and now for this week's show, we have with us a great one, Vitor Santa Maria, and he's a very talented product designer with lots and lots of experiences, and he's done a few crowdfunding campaigns successfully and is traveling the world and getting tons of experience. So he shares very openly some tips and insights and the ways things have changed in the crowdfunding game. So let's listen in. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We are here in Lohu district of Shenzhen at the clubhouse of the Grand Hyatt Hotel. And we have with us a special guest, Vitor Santa Maria. So from Hidden Ink, thank you for being here, Vitor.
Oh, thank you. Hi, everybody.
Sure. So you've been over on this side of the world a few times, but as your bio says, you're like a very experienced product designer, engineer, would you say? From
not officially an engineer, but my whole family is made of engineers, and but I'm a product designer myself.
Yeah, I'm a product designer and Brazilian background, Milan educated. That's where you got a lot of your design experience, and now entrepreneur, doing a successful series of crowdfunding for Hidden, and today we're going to try to dig in a little bit about how it got started. And maybe first, so you've always been passionate about design from early days, or maybe a little bit about your early background.
Sure. Well, actually, I always liked to design. I always liked to, everybody kind of connects design with drawing. I always loved to draw, but, at a certain point of my life, I was not sure whether I was going to do design or actually filmmaking or music. So I had the doubt in my head between these three things. And in the end, I was in Scotland doing an English course. I went, these things you do when you're a teenager, you go study English. Well, you didn't have to, but, you go study English somewhere, like in my case was Scotland. And I met a girl, Switzerland. And then I say, design, Italy, nearby Switzerland. So that kind of made the decision for me. So 1 year later, I was moving to Italy to study design. But yeah, pretty much I always loved it.
Cool. It's always about a girl, right?
It didn't really work out, because 1 year later when I was going there, we broke up. We already broke up at that point.
But you stayed in Milan and cool. And so, yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about crowdfunding. I know a lot of people are interested in the business side, but I like to kind of get the roots a little bit. And you work for some really big names as a professional, right? You want to maybe explain some of your...
So after school, you know, after studying design, I stayed in Italy. Actually, I wanted to go to Japan, but I never got to. So I stayed in Milan. I was working for... I started working to corporations. Actually, I always worked for American corporations, pretty much. Whirlpool and then Motorola. And that's actually where I met John, you know, my business partner. He started Motorola when we were working at Motorola. We had a little office in Milan, like a European design center in Milan. And John, you know, I was there already 2 years. John came along. And then we became friends. And then 2 years after Motorola closed the office in Milan, and John decided that he wanted to stay in the company and move back to the US, I decided I wanted to quit and stay in Milan. And but we kept in touch and you know, always like working on side projects. We both pretty much always had like this entrepreneurial mindset, always trying to, you know, do our own thing, do our own business. And in that, also because of that, we became very good friends, I think. So yeah, that's pretty much.
And so what year did Hidden was your first venture together? And maybe how did it transition? He went to the US, you were in Italy.
Well, actually, you know, thanks to Skype, you know, we actually managed to keep in touch. And we would exchange like some sketches here and there, like some ideas of, you know, we wanted to create like new products, but manufacture them ourselves, not like depend on a big company to do them. But one thing that is very nice to notice as well is that, you know, thanks to our experience in the big companies, we already knew pretty much how, you know, to manufacture, how to, you know, meet a supplier, how to handle these things, how to follow production, all that stuff we learned, both of us, before even starting our company. With the Hidden Radio, it actually started in a funny way. We're exchanging, I think John was in Chicago, I was in Milan. I think we exchanged a few emails with some concepts, and you know, he sent it over, I changed the bit, I sent it back, and then, you know, the idea came up and we did it. And we got inspired by a friend of ours, a very, very, very good designer called Scott Wilson. And the nice thing about him is that, you know, he created so much buzz on the internet, like with just a rendering. Like he did once, when Apple launched the first iPod Shuffle, he created a cap that actually closed the shuffle, but it made it look like a cross, and it was kind of a pendant, and it was just a rendering back then, but I think it ended up like in the cover of the Wired magazine because it made so much of a buzz on the internet, and he got a lot of press because of that, and he ended up manufacturing the thing and selling it. So we were really inspired about those initiatives that this guy did. So we decided to do a test with the Hidden Radio. We made some really nice renderings. We sent to a couple of blogs. Actually, we sent to Core 77 and Moco Loco. These are two design-oriented blogs. Core 77 is like a total industrial designer blog, while the Moco Loco is more artsy and design as well. So we sent it out, and like it went totally crazy. Like the other blogs started to repost it, and soon enough we had like thousands of mentions like everywhere, and people writing to us like asking to buy the product, but it was just a random. It actually crashed our website and stuff. So we said, oops, maybe we have something here. Sometime after, obviously we had our day jobs back then, so this was kind of a shelf product. We did that. We said, oops, we have something here. And but we didn't do anything like immediately at that point. We waited until it was, I believe, 2010. We decided to exhibit it actually got invited to exhibit it in the Milan Furniture Fair. So we kind of had it, you know, on a display there in a very nice area of the show. And we got approached by Muji. you know, Muji, the Japanese, you know, manufacturer, the, you know, retailer, actually. So they were interested in putting our product into their catalog, and we started negotiating with them. And from that moment on, we started, okay, now it's on. So we started like spending actually our savings to develop the product. All of that still while we had our day jobs. At that point, I was working at Whirlpool. And I remember like flying to Japan, like I would take a week holiday, fly to Japan, and then come back all jet lagged and go straight to Poland to finish working some stuff for my day job. But it was pretty exciting. So in less than a year, we had everything developed. We had verbal agreement from Muji saying they were, I mean, finally, we finalized the price. Everything was set. Everything was good. But then actually, you know, there was the tsunami, you know, remember the issue there? And they kind of went into emergency mode and they said, okay, let's put it on pause for now. Let's talk 6 months for now. They pushed back a little bit. So we waited 6 months. We waited a little more, nothing still. So we, by that point, we just said, oh, look, there's this nice website, Kickstarter. Let's just put it in there. And by the way, at that point, we had already the product like ready. Almost ready for production. You know, we had all the tool drawings. Everything was pretty much ready. We had Muji even sent their quality control people. They were using the Japanese company TEAC. I don't know how TEAC. T-E-A-C. I don't know how to pronounce that in English. TEAC. Muji, at that time at least, used that company to basically do the quality control and help, you know, developing all the electronic products. And the TEAC guys, they even, you know, we met with them. They, you know, so everybody was pretty engaged into that, including Muji. So they really kind of, the tsunami thing really hit them somehow. They never said it was that, but it was kind of coincidental at that point. But anyway, so we went to Kickstarter. It was 2011. So it was before the big hit, the big boom of Kickstarter. So, yeah, we went there kind of like actually pretty much right on Christmas, which is the worst time you want to put a crowdfunding thing campaign in there. And even still, we managed to get like almost $1 million in the first campaign, and it was pretty amazing. So after that, we did some changes because we got so much funding, we decided to improve even further the quality and everything that we could. So we did a few changes, but everything was pretty much ready. And shortly after, I think like 6 months after, we shipped it. So that's it.
A lot of stuff there. That's great. So Christmas 2011, launch on Kickstarter. And before we start recording, I want to make sure people know you spent a lot of time doing the video, right? And the listing. Yeah. So before people think, oh, I put on Kickstarter and got a million, maybe explain some of the work that you went through to get it on there to that point.
Yeah, I think in general, Kickstarter like is very different now also from what it was in 2011. At that point, just to say, and we will get to the video later, I'll get to that. But at that point, it was very easy in 2011 actually to get press. Like it's not that it was super easy, but basically we were kind of hustling like 24/7. Between comments on Kickstarter, you know, following up the comments from the backers, answering messages from people. But we also had the time to, we're sending like 20 emails to journalists every day, like for the first, actually, funny enough, on the first campaign, we waited a couple of weeks before we started contacting journalists because it was so unknown at that point, the Kickstarter thing, that people found out, actually wired, posted about us before we even contact anyone. So it was really easy to get articles back then. Okay, obviously, I guess you have to have a nice project. But Wired wrote about us and a few other people wrote about it. I think Fast Company wrote about us before we even reached out to them. And then we started anyways after a couple of weeks to reach out to journalists. And it was pretty, compared to today, it was pretty easy to get an article out there. I mean, assuming your product was nice. Yeah, now things are a little more difficult. Like Kickstarter had its boom, like with when the Pebble guys did. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, that was kind of the boom when they broke all the records. They some guy just slightly before them broke the million. And at that point, I think the big boom of Kickstarter started to happen and people started to learn that Kickstarter existed. So now pretty much everybody has done a Kickstarter already. And then there's Indiegogo as well. And the problem is that now journalists, in which we know that because we are now on our third project, and we get no love from journalists. And the reason is because they get 100 emails a day about, you know, pitches for Kickstarter and Indiegogo projects. So they kind of got a little adverse to that. The other reason is that many, many of these products that looked nice in the first, they didn't deliver, especially projects that are delivering products, like it's to manufacture something and deliver is not as easy as it is to make a nice rendering, you know. So it's a lot of people just put the ideas there and then they, even with the best intentions, but they just didn't know who to talk to or how to manufacture, or like in some last cases, like it recently happened, like people just miscalculated the costs and they ran out of money. Like there was just not enough money to deliver the products. So for one reason or another, people don't deliver sometimes. And journalists, they got a little bit, how do you say, bitter about this, with the right reasons, I guess. So yeah, so today is much more hard to do that. So my advice is actually you need to build your audience before even starting. Otherwise, it's so easy to lose visibility. Like you launch a project, you have maybe 1 day window to not even. It depends. I mean, they have this algorithm to keep your visibility. You know, the more you sell, the more people pledge and the more activity your project page has, the more visibility you have on the platform. So your best chance is really to have a big boom in the very first day. So your score is going to be high and you're going to be visible for more time. But it's very difficult. If you don't have an audience, you're going to sink really quickly, kind of similar to the App Store. You know, in the beginning, there were all these millionaires and everybody started doing it. And, you know, soon enough, it was just flooded. And now I think it's probably one of the most wild environments to do business, I guess, is the App Store.
The apps is even crazier because nobody even wants to pay for them. So at least with the crowdfunding, you get paid. But with apps, you got to make it, give it away for free.
99 people just, yeah, if it's more than 99, people just scream at you.
Yeah, so not to get too off topic, but like there's also been these cases where Chinese manufacturers have like spyware and viruses. I think they do that to make money, actually, because they can pre-install software and apps. But this is what the consumer doesn't want to pay. So the manufacturer or this, you know, the supplier has to make money somehow. But I guess it's a good and a bad thing, right? Anybody now can sell or list their product or their app, but it's getting harder to get found. So yeah, like audience, I'm just trying to think of the listener. Maybe they probably aren't as skilled in design as you are, and they're not. And now it's 2016. And what kind of tips to build an audience? I mean, of course, there's so many ways, but what would be some maybe lower hanging fruit?
Yeah, that's actually a very good question. We are lucky, you know, that we have already a built audience, but I guess social media is one. It really depends on the product you have, but I guess, you know, it's social media can work. I think, I guess, trying to get press to, and this is actually something maybe a little, it gets a little bit polemical. Maybe I'll get a little polemic, but the point is that the only way that you can actually, I mean, press is amazing, like journalists, bloggers, and tech bloggers, let's say in our case, it's the best thing because they have a lot of following, you know, they have a lot of people that, you know, follow them obviously and read their blogs and stuff. But it's the funny thing is like the whole system came to a point where it kind of backfired in the sense that the whole purpose of the crowdfunding is to give people, as you're saying, like who, you know, the opportunity before, like, let's say only big corporations like you know, I don't know, big companies like, you know, even Motorola, where I used to work, you know, only companies like this had the possibility to create products and launch them in the market. Crowdfunding actually gave like regular people the chance to actually launch their own products and develop their own products. The problem with it getting so crowded right now is that the only people who get reviews, you know, and therefore get kind of are able to boom in the platform are people that actually have already developed the product, which kind of defeats the purpose. So basically, in other words, the only way to get a journalist to review your product on Kickstarter is like if you have prototypes, fully working prototypes, which means that you already, you know, in theory, you have to have already your $50,000 or $100,000 to develop before going to Kickstarter, which kind of defeats the purpose a little bit, you know. So yeah, I don't know. It's tricky.
Maybe it's going back like apps. Yeah. Kind of. So, well, I mean, there are programs that are coming out to help entrepreneurs, like there's accelerators, hardware, and more hardware focused too, that are in Asia as well as in the US that you can sell to them, and they have like an audience or a platform that, like, yeah, we've had some on the show, like Hexcelerators here, there's Highway One, and there's more and more coming up that are willing to buy into your dream, and they also help you with making sure the product gets made correctly. So that's another thing. So do we want to talk about video now?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. The other thing is, like, it's very important that, you know, I think it's about communication of the product, the project, let's say, because it could be anything really. I mean, I talk product because we do products ourselves. But whatever the project is, the message needs to be very clear. And video is a big part of that. But I think even before getting to the video, you need to make sure that the idea is there, because I think that's where everything comes from. You know, it needs to be kind of also, I think even though the bloggers and the journalists might not review it because of the whole burden of the crowdfunding, a good test for you to judge if your idea is good or not is like to think if it's bloggable, like why would someone want to post about it? I think if you look at the idea from external perspective and say, okay, this is bloggable, it's kind of interesting, there's something there that kind of wows somehow, I think it's a good test. So first one is the idea itself, but then it needs to be presented properly. So that means it needs to be communicated, needs to get the point, needs to understand what's about. And that goes from the title on the page all the way to the description on the page, and most importantly, the video. You also need to get like the idea right through in the first 30 seconds, because, you know, even Kickstarter, I believe they recommend to do the video under a minute. We were never able to do that because we just had always so much to say. And it gets very, I mean, ideally, yeah, in a perfect world, 1 minute would be perfect. Actually, we always strive for that, but it's very difficult. So what we do, what I do, because I'm the one normally editing the video, is like you basically need to keep the rhythm, to keep the attention always, you know, let's say the first 30 seconds buy you the next minute. In the next minute, you're going to need to throw something there that grabs attention enough to keep people attached for the next 30 seconds. And then you need to keep, like, the rhythm needs to be right. So I think the length, actually, the hub that is our last project, I think it's the longest video we ever made. I think, not sure if the second one was longer, but anyways, about like six minutes or so. So it's quite long, but when you watch it, it doesn't feel that long. Maybe it doesn't feel like a minute, but it doesn't feel as long as 6-7 minutes, whatever that is, because the rhythm is there. There's always something that brings something else. And then there's one idea brings the other, and you create links and excitement throughout the video. Another thing to mention about the videos as well is, like, we always do the videos ourselves. Like, we shoot them for definitely under $10,000 and that including like as we fly to LA normally, the last two videos we shot in LA because we needed some, we also wanted to have a little bit of fun, yeah. But mostly because of the weather, we needed some really nice shots outside. And, you know, it's because of John and I being located apart, like it's not that we can wait for the nice week with the nice weather and shoot. We kind of need to plan. So kind of LA is there's always sunny there. It's actually pretty incredible. And there's nice, very nice locations as well. You can find like amazing houses, very cheap to rent on Airbnb. And I mean, very cheap enough, like for a day that you can shoot. So we always do that. Actually, we go there, we rent a house in Airbnb. We ask permission to shoot, we shoot. And it's also very easy to find actors in there, models and people like that. It's very, very easy. Also like a camera operator, we have our friend, very good guy. He actually, you know, he's there too. So works out pretty well. And then once everything is shot, then I take it back with me and I edit the whole thing. The hub one took me like a long time because that one is a very complex one. It took me almost 3 months. But it was very complex. There was a lot of special effects, particles, 3D, a lot of stuff. So, yeah, but that's the way we also keep the budget like pretty low on those things. So, yeah.
Great. But, you know, I guess some people don't have that skill, or maybe they should just learn how to do video editing or...
I think the video editing is like, well, you can do pretty good stuff like with very basic tools. And I think like there's like, you can now shoot a freaking amazing video with your phone and you pretty much can edit it with even the app on the iPhone, like to edit video. I don't know, iMovie or whatever it's called. You can do a pretty good quality. The iPhone 6, I think, has a pretty good camera as well. I talk iPhone because I only use that. So I don't know about, but I'm pretty sure all the other ones have good quality cameras and tools as well. And that's actually something I forgot to mention before, because even though we do it that way, you don't have to. There's amazing tools out there these days. I mean, it's not like, even like 5 years ago was already not as easy as it is now. I think now also with sound and you can do a lot with your phone alone. You know,
this has been really great. Thanks for sharing so much. I always like kind of like maybe has the last question. A newbie listening, trying to crack, you know, Kickstarter or crowdfunding. I know you mentioned build an audience. Any other kind of tips or getting started for them?
I think building an audience is key. Just to give you an idea, I think like with our last project, the hub, we have a pretty good email list of, you know, subscribers. And thanks to that, because we had no press coverage in the first weeks, I think we got the first one after second or third week or something like that. But thanks to our subscribers list, we, you know, and people who backed us on the other projects as well, I think we reached our goal in a few hours, and I think it was about $90,000 or something. So it was pretty amazing. And that's why I think the, you know, building an audience is really key, because it's really the most important asset I think you have. Some other suggestions, I don't know. Oh, yeah, sure. Do the homework. That's the suggestion, because you need to always add a little extra time when you plan your project. You should add also a little extra budget, because things will always go wrong. There will always be problems. There will always be unforeseen things that you didn't plan for. So, yeah.
Great. So how can people check out what your work is, and websites or ways people might be able to check out what's going on?
Yeah, our website is good. It's hiddenradiodesign.com. And there you have also the links for the Kickstarter pages and stuff. So, yeah.
All right, thank you. And great to meet you in Asia, in Shenzhen. So thanks for coming on, Vitor.
Thank you, Mike. Cheers.
Thank you, Vitor, for coming on and sharing. I wish we put some video footage with this. One of those times video podcast might have been better. We had a great view up on over 100 stories or so overlooking Hong Kong and the Shenzhen skyline pretty amazing sight. I hope to see some of you guys coming out over this side of the world. I know there's people in the US and Europe and South America and everywhere listening. And I think the best way to get some experience is to take a trip. So, you know, springtime is the busy time for the trade shows and everything. So maybe you're coming by. Keep me posted. So that's all we have for this week. Also, just a little sneak preview. We're working on a private membership forum to help all the hustlers doing Hong Kong business to share tips and strategies for banking and all this kind of immigration and corporate structures. So it's made. We have a few members in there now. So we will be talking about it more later. But if you want, you can send me a note at mike@globalfromasia.com and maybe I will give you some sneak access. All right, guys. Have a great week. Talk later. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.